Elizabeth Strout's Tell Me Everything has captivated readers since its release, earning praise from literary critics and celebrities alike. Oprah Winfrey called it a masterclass in human connection, while the New York Times praised Strout's uncanny ability to illuminate the darkest corners of the human heart. The novel continues Strout's exploration of her beloved fictional Maine community, further cementing her reputation as one of America's most insightful chroniclers of small-town life. Set against the backdrop of post-pandemic America, the book resonates deeply in our current cultural moment, exploring how isolation, political division, and personal trauma shape our connections with others. Imagine walking through a small coastal town where everyone has secrets, where a simple conversation by a river can change everything, and where the most ordinary lives conceal extraordinary pain. This is the world Strout invites us to enter, a world where the request, "Tell me everything," reveals both the yearning for and impossibility of truly knowing another person. In Crosby, Maine, the seemingly mundane routines of daily life mask profound emotional struggles. Bob Burgess, a lawyer who returned from New York City 15 years ago, walks regularly with the famous writer Lucy Barton along the river. During these walks, they reveal their deepest fears to each other. "The reason I used to drink too much is because I'm terrified. I'm always terrified," Bob confesses to Lucy, explaining his nightly wine consumption and smoking habit. Lucy responds with understanding, creating a connection through shared emotional honesty. The pandemic has left its mark on everyone in town. Housing crises have skyrocketed, forcing longtime residents like Charlene Bibber to sell their homes. Charlene, a 55-year-old who cleans retirement apartments, moves into a cheap unit in one of the old wooden houses that wealthier residents barely notice. Despite having money from the sale of her house, she realizes it won't sustain her for long. Her story represents the growing economic divide in small towns across America. Winter in Maine brings a sense of compression, of being squeezed for Bob, whose heart flickers with anxiety due to both the season and the state of the world. Christmas decorations appear before Thanksgiving, but for Bob, the holiday season brings sadness stemming from a childhood memory when he innocently told his widowed mother he didn't like Christmas, causing her to cry, a thumbprint pressed deeply into his soul of real sorrow and regret. These quiet struggles reveal how past wounds shape present lives. When Bob's former wife Pam visits, she confesses her descent into alcoholism during the pandemic and her discovery of her husband's affair with her best friend. Her story, hiding vodka bottles in her dressing room and disposing of empties in public trash bins across Long Island, illustrates how people conceal their pain behind facades of normalcy. Isn't this the human condition? We walk through life carrying invisible burdens while presenting composed exteriors to the world. The discovery of Gloria Beach's decomposed body in a quarry pool becomes the central mystery that Bob Burgess must unravel. Gloria, an 86-year-old woman who had disappeared from the home she shared with her son Matthew, was found inside a missing rental car allegedly taken by a woman named Ashley Monroe. The investigation reveals layers of family trauma that had festered for decades. Gloria's life story emerges through journals that eventually reach Bob. Born Gloria Labe in rural Maine, she had a baby at 16 after apparent abuse by an uncle. By 17, she lived in a motel, working the front desk while caring for her baby and sexually pleasing the owner to keep her room. Walter Beach married her after just 4 weeks. In Shirley Falls, Gloria gained weight, became increasingly unhappy, and worked in a school cafeteria where students called her Beach Ball. When her son Matthew developed leukemia at age 10, she quit her job to care for him. Her husband eventually left without warning. As Bob interviews Matthew about his mother's disappearance, a complex picture emerges. Matt reveals he doesn't own a cell phone and has few friends after years caring for his mother like a baby. Bob discovers Matt is a talented painter who creates beautiful portraits of pregnant women, though almost no one has seen his work. Matt mentions that weeks before his mother's disappearance, his sister Diana visited and shot a raccoon with Matt's rifle, which he still keeps loaded in his bedroom closet. The investigation takes a turn when Bob meets Diana Beach, who appears younger than her age, possibly due to plastic surgery, and well-dressed. She immediately asks if Matt will be arrested and explains she visited her mother only once or twice yearly, finding their living situation unhealthy. Diana mentions having memory lapses, a lifelong condition she dismisses as no big deal. Later, Bob encounters Diana at the Portland airport looking disheveled with a bright orange leather bag. When their eyes meet, her face transforms eerily, her eyes receding with almost a film over them. She cryptically says she's come to tend to business. The truth eventually emerges. Diana Beach committed suicide in her childhood bedroom after becoming the prime suspect in her mother's murder. Evidence included a red wig purchased before Gloria's disappearance and EasyPass records placing Diana's car near the scene. Matt reveals his family's dark history. Diana had been sexually abused by their father since childhood, while their mother did nothing. Diana was also raped near the same quarry where their mother's body was found by a family friend when she was 16, and their mother had callously called her a whore. In Diana's suicide note, written in girlish handwriting, she confessed to killing her mother, explaining that the memory had been blocked until she found dirt and twigs on her shoes after returning home. She wrote that her husband's desertion had undone her, but that she did a good job with life, for the most part. This tragic case illustrates how trauma can be passed through generations, how memories can be suppressed, and how a person can appear functional while harboring devastating secrets. The Beach family story serves as a microcosm for the hidden suffering that exists behind closed doors in any community.
Throughout the novel, Strout introduces the concept of sin eaters, people who unconsciously absorb others' pain and guilt. Lucy identifies Bob as one such person during their walks by the frozen river. "You're a sin eater," she tells him, "someone who unconsciously takes on others' sins." This concept becomes central to understanding Bob's character and his relationships. Bob's role as a sin eater manifests in his legal career, defending those accused of crimes, but also in his personal relationships. He stays with the devastated Matt Beach for 5 days after Diana's suicide, sleeping in Gloria's bed and comforting Matt through his grief, holding him as he cries with gasping sobs of a child. During the day, Bob paints over the blood spatters in Diana's room and removes Matt's paintings when Matt threatens to destroy them. The sin eater concept extends to other characters as well. Lucy tells Olive Kitteridge about Janice Tucker, whom she describes as a sin eater, someone who absorbs others' sins throughout life. Janice's story involves taking in a young man named Grunt after her husband's death, caring for someone who had been severely abused. This theme raises profound questions about human connection and responsibility. What does it mean to carry others' burdens? Is it a strength or a weakness to absorb the pain of those around us? The novel suggests that sin eaters play a crucial role in communities, providing compassion and understanding where others might turn away. Yet this role comes at a cost. Bob experiences physical distress from the emotional weight he carries, losing weight and struggling through his days. The sin eater concept also illuminates the novel's exploration of guilt and responsibility. Bob's brother Jim has carried the guilt of their father's death since childhood, having played with the gear shift that caused the fatal accident and then blaming 4-year-old Bob. When Jim finally confesses this to his son Larry after Larry's near-fatal accident, Larry calls his father evil and rejects him. This rejection devastates Jim, showing how the truth can sometimes destroy rather than heal relationships. Perhaps what makes sin eaters special is their capacity to hold space for others' darkest truths without judgment. They create safe harbors where confession and acceptance can coexist. In a world increasingly divided by judgment and righteousness, the novel suggests that sin eaters provide a necessary counterbalance, a reminder of our shared humanity and fallibility. "We live on shifting sand," Lucy tells Bob during one of their walks, "and we pretend we don't." This metaphor perfectly captures Strout's portrayal of marriages throughout the novel. Each relationship exists in a state of constant, subtle change, with partners attempting to create stability amid uncertainty. Bob and Margaret's marriage reveals this tension. When Margaret returns hours late from delivering a sermon in Boston, Bob's anger erupts not just from the immediate situation, but from childhood abandonment wounds. Their argument escalates when Bob accuses Margaret of gaslighting him, and he contemplates whether she displays narcissistic traits, self-absorption, inability to take criticism, controlling behavior, and lack of empathy. Though they reconcile when Margaret apologizes after researching gaslighting, an underlying sadness remains. Pam's marriage to Ted exemplifies how wealth and status can't protect relationships from betrayal. Her discovery of Ted's affair with her supposed best friend, Lydia Robbins, shatters her world, leading her to abruptly stop drinking after years of alcoholism. Later, during the apocalyptic orange skies caused by Canadian forest fires, Ted arrives at Pam's apartment looking disheveled, confessing he misses her and can't stand Lydia. This moment of vulnerability suggests that even broken marriages contain threads of genuine connection. Bill's marriage to Ted includes her first marriage to William, her second marriage to David, whom she calls the best thing that happened to me, except for my girls, and eventually her decision to remarry William. When William announces their engagement at Bob's surprise birthday party, Bob and Lucy share a deeply intimate glance across the room, acknowledging their connection while accepting its changed nature. This moment captures the bittersweet reality that sometimes the deepest connections exist outside marriage. Jim and Helen's marriage ends with Helen's death from cancer, catapulting Jim into an entirely new country of terrible silence and solitude. Though he interacts with Helen's friends and occasional lunch companions, he feels exiled to an unimaginable place. Jim reads a passage about grief in a book given to him by Helen's friend. Because his wife had died in summer, he waited for winter to come, and when it came, he saw that it made no difference. This poignant observation captures how grief transcends seasons and time. What makes these portrayals of marriage so compelling is their unflinching honesty. Strout shows how partners can simultaneously love each other deeply and fail to meet each other's needs. She reveals the private languages, unspoken agreements, and secret disappointments that exist within long-term relationships. Yet she also celebrates the moments of genuine connection. Margaret bringing food to Matt Beach's house, Bob and Pam's mutual understanding after Helen's funeral, Jim's desire to have his ashes spread over the Androscoggin River rather than being buried with Helen. These moments remind us that even on shifting sand, meaningful connection is possible. At the heart of the novel lies the profound, largely unspoken connection between Bob Burgess and Lucy Barton. Their weekly walks along the river create a space where both can reveal their deepest fears and truths. This relationship evolves from friendship to something more complex when Bob realizes he loves Lucy, a realization that hits him with overwhelming force one day as he sees her waiting by the wooden fence. Their connection is built on mutual understanding rather than romantic gestures. When Bob confesses his constant terror, Lucy responds with empathy rather than judgment. When Lucy shares her fear when the sun goes down, Bob listens attentively. They discuss aging, their children, and envy with remarkable honesty. Bob admits the only people he envies are Lucy's daughters because she loves them so much, while Lucy acknowledges she's not jealous of Margaret either. What makes their relationship so powerful is its foundation in emotional authenticity. Unlike Bob's marriages to Margaret and Pam, his connection with Lucy doesn't require him to hide parts of himself. "You give me a break from life," Bob tells Lucy, to which she responds, "A break from your sin eating." This exchange captures how their relationship provides relief from the burdens they each carry. Yet their connection remains largely unconsummated. When Bob confesses his feelings to his brother Jim, Jim warns him not to act on them, saying, "You're going to be screwing like rabbits and your whole world will fall apart. Margaret will probably die as a result." This dramatic warning reflects the potential consequences of pursuing their attraction. The tension between them eventually leads to an argument when Lucy asks Bob about the meaning of unrecorded lives, which Bob dismisses as childish. They trade insults, Lucy correcting his saying, the Ukraine, and Bob questioning her philosophical musings. This conflict creates distance between them for 3 weeks, during which Bob experiences surprising relief, mentally listing Lucy's faults while rediscovering intimacy with Margaret. The resolution comes when Lucy agrees to remarry William, a decision she later describes to Olive Kitteridge as her not the saddest story ever told, her unconsummated love affair with Bob. Lucy explains how seeing Bob after his unfortunate haircut made her love him more, but also realize they would never be together because Bob, being Bob, saved us both. She concludes that love is love in all its forms. After Lucy's wedding, she and Bob eventually resume their walks, though less frequently, with a very slight frisson between them, as though long ago they had been lovers but were now just old friends. They develop a gentle goodbye ritual of holding each other's arm, a physical expression of their enduring connection despite the paths not taken. Olive Kitteridge, the cantankerous yet insightful character from Strout's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, serves as a Greek chorus in Tell Me Everything, offering observations about human nature and relationships. Now in her 90s, Olive has gained wisdom through her own experiences of love, loss, and loneliness. When Olive's best friend, Isabel Goodrow, announces plans to move to California to be near her daughter, Olive faces a profound emotional crisis. Contemplating suicide, she remembers her own father's suicide and its impact, which stops her. After an agonizing wait, Isabel calls with surprising news. She refused to leave Maine, telling her daughter she couldn't abandon her home and her friendship with Olive. This moment reveals Olive's vulnerability beneath her tough exterior. Throughout the novel, Olive shares stories with Lucy about people from their community, creating a tapestry of human experience. She tells Lucy about Pauline, who encountered the fisherman she had loved 40 years earlier while visiting her childhood home on Cliff Island. When Lucy asks what the point of the story is, Olive laughs and says Lucy's stories had little point too. Lucy responds quietly, "People. People and the lives they lead. That's the point." This exchange captures the novel's central theme, that human stories matter not for their dramatic arcs, but for what they reveal about the human condition. Olive also tells Lucy about Muddy Wilson, a history teacher who fell apart after his wife Sally's death, having inappropriate relationships and failed marriages before dying of cancer. Olive explains that Sally had been Muddy's linchpin. Without her, he couldn't hold himself together. This concept of the linchpin becomes important when Olive later tells Bob that Margaret, not Lucy, is his linchpin. After Lucy's wedding to William, Lucy visits 91-year-old Olive and shares her unconsummated love affair with Bob. After Lucy leaves, Olive crosses the bridge to tell Isabel but finds her friend asleep. Olive waits, watching Isabel's thin chest rise and fall, contemplating Lucy's words that love, in all its different forms, is still love. This moment shows Olive's evolution, from the judgmental, difficult woman of earlier novels to someone who can appreciate the many forms love takes. Olive's presence in the novel provides continuity with Strout's other works, while offering a perspective shaped by decades of life experience. Her blunt assessments, like declaring William's engagement announcement at Bob's birthday party very poor manners, provide moments of humor amid the novel's emotional intensity. Yet her insights about human nature reveal Strout's compassionate understanding of how people struggle, fail, and occasionally transcend their limitations. Trauma echoes throughout Tell Me Everything, shaping characters' behaviors and relationships in ways they often don't recognize. The novel explores how people carry childhood wounds into adulthood and how healing becomes possible through connection and understanding. Bob's childhood trauma stems from his father's accidental death and his mother's emotional distance afterward. When Margaret returns late from her sermon, Bob's anger is triggered not by the current situation, but by a childhood memory of his mother forgetting to pick him up. This pattern of connecting present emotions to past wounds appears repeatedly in the novel, illustrating how trauma distorts our perceptions of current events. Jim carries the guilt of causing their father's death and blaming Bob, a secret he finally confesses to his son Larry after Larry's near-fatal accident. Rather than bringing healing, this confession causes Larry to reject Jim completely, calling him evil. When Bob intervenes, he tells Larry about a case involving generational trauma and sexual abuse to provide perspective on human failings. Bob becomes furious when Larry dismisses this, explaining that no one truly knows who caused their father's death since Jim's memories of that day are clearly wrong. Bob tells Larry he's had a privileged life with a fucked-up father, not an evil one. The Beach family exemplifies how trauma passes through generations. Diana's childhood sexual abuse by her father while her mother did nothing created wounds that never healed. Her rape at 16, near the same quarry where she would later dispose of her mother's body, creates a terrible symmetry. Matt's childhood leukemia became the one thing that gave his mother purpose, creating a complicated dynamic where his illness became her redemption. Yet the novel also offers possibilities for healing. Matt Beach finds hope through his art, painting portraits of pregnant women that capture beauty and potential. When Bob sees Matt walking happily with a woman, holding hands, he calls Margaret, delighted by this sight. Margaret insists, "You did this, Bob Burgess, by caring for Matt after his trauma." This moment suggests that compassionate presence can help heal even the deepest wounds. Larry's accident creates an opportunity for reconciliation with Jim, though it ultimately fails. For a brief period, Jim experiences an emotional transformation, feeling exalted as he apologizes for his past mistakes. The relationship seems miraculously healed, with Jim feeling transported to a country of purity where love outweighs sorrow. Though this healing proves temporary, it offers a glimpse of what's possible when defenses drop away. Perhaps the most profound healing occurs in small moments of connection. Bob and Lucy sharing their deepest fears by the river, Margaret bringing food to Matt's house, Olive and Isabel affirming their friendship. These moments suggest that while trauma may never completely disappear, its power can diminish through authentic human connection.
"We live on shifting sand," Lucy tells Bob during one of their walks, "and we pretend we don't." This metaphor captures the novel's central philosophical question: how do we create meaning in a world of constant change and uncertainty? The characters in Tell Me Everything face this question in various ways. For Bob, meaning comes through helping others, defending Matt Beach, supporting his brother Jim, listening to Lucy's fears. Yet he struggles with his own terror, confessing to Lucy, "I'm always terrified." His cigarettes and nightly wine help manage this constant anxiety, but the deeper solution comes through connection with others. Lucy questions the meaning of unrecorded lives, like Addie Beal, a college friend who struggled with alcoholism and promiscuity before dying young of cancer. "What's the point of anyone's life?" Lucy asks Olive, particularly someone like Addie, whose life went nowhere. This question reflects Lucy's own search for meaning as a writer who records lives that might otherwise be forgotten. Olive Kitteridge, in her 90s, finds meaning through friendship with Isabel and through sharing stories. When Lucy asks what the point of Olive's stories is, Olive laughs and says Lucy's stories had little point too. Lucy responds, "People. People and the lives they lead. That's the point." This exchange suggests that meaning emerges not from grand narratives, but from paying attention to ordinary human experiences. The novel also explores how external events, the pandemic, political divisions, climate change, affect people's sense of meaning and security. During their walks, Lucy and Bob discuss concerns about political divisions and possible civil war. The apocalyptic orange skies caused by Canadian forest fires create a backdrop of environmental anxiety. These larger contexts remind us that individual lives unfold within historical moments that shape our possibilities. By the novel's end, several characters find tentative answers to the question of meaning. Matt Beach discovers purpose through his art and a new relationship. Bob, catching his reflection in a window, is startled by the older man he sees, but gives himself a very slight nod of acceptance.
Lucy concludes that love is love in all its forms, suggesting that connection itself provides meaning regardless of its shape. Perhaps the most profound insight comes when Bob tells Mrs. Hasselbeck, after listening to her family drama, "It's life, Mrs. Hasselbeck. It's just called life." This simple statement acknowledges both the pain and beauty of human existence without trying to resolve its contradictions. On Shifting Sand, we build our lives day by day, finding meaning not in certainty, but in how we respond to life's inevitable changes and challenges.